You're listening to the Hudson Valley Region Podcast, an official podcast of the New York City Church of Christ, teaching and worshiping God in the beautiful New York State counties of Orange and Rockland.
And we've been doing a series recently on generosity, working through 2 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9, and I want to continue with that study today. If you haven't been here for the first two parts of the series, that's okay. Each part is a standalone part, and so you won't be feel lost or behind or anything like that. But if you do want to go back and listen to the first two parts of the series, then you can go to our website and look on the website, and under the Hudson Valley region, it'll be there, and you're welcome to get caught up in that way. But you're also welcome just to listen today and to take what you can learn, and I look forward to us being able to read these scriptures and to apply them. Our first study on generosity was from 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 1 through 9. And Paul wrote there talking about the motivation behind our generosity. And then we looked at 2 Corinthians 8, 16, verses 9, 5. And he continued to mention some practical matters as well as motivation. Actually, that's what we're going to cover today, 16 through 9, 5. And so the second study was verses 10 through 15. But Paul did talk about some extremely practical matters there. He's going to build on that a little bit here in this next section. So if you would, open your Bibles to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. And we will read through the first part of this and save the second part for the second point. So, okay, let's read verses 16 through 24. 2 Corinthians 8, 16 through 24. And really what Paul is talking about here, again, it's a practical matter of administration and accountability. So he's basically saying that they were taking up a contribution for the disciples in Jerusalem. Jerusalem was undergoing a very severe famine. And so Paul started taking up a collection for the disciples in the church in Jerusalem. And now he's asking the Gentile churches to contribute to that collection. And in a sense, that was a special contribution, because it really wasn't being used for the work of the church locally. It was being used for the church in Jerusalem. But as he talks about it, he spends two chapters in these 13 chapters speaking about generosity and about giving. And I think it's interesting that this is one of the longest sections on generosity and giving in the entire Bible. And it takes up two full chapters as Paul writes to the church in Corinth about giving to the disciples in Jerusalem. And he does it the whole time without ever mentioning the word money, and actually without ever mentioning the word contribution. He simply talks about generosity and having a generous heart. And so as we look through this, we're going to see what it means to take up this gift and to use the gift properly. And that's Paul's concern right now. He wants people to understand that what we collect from you, it will be used for a specific purpose and it will be managed well. And so really he's just giving some housekeeping matters about their generosity and about how their generosity is going to be used, their giving is going to be used. So look in verse 6, it says, "Thanks be to God who put into the heart of Titus the same concern I have for you. For Titus not only welcomed our appeal, but he was coming to you with much enthusiasm on his own initiative. And we are sending along with him the brother who is praised from all the churches for his service to the gospel. What is more, he was chosen by the churches to accompany us as we carry the offering which we administer in order to honor the Lord himself and to show our eagerness to help. We want to avoid any criticism of the way we administer this liberal gift, for we are making pains to do what is right not only in the eyes of the Lord, but in the eyes of man." And that's really what this part of the passage is about. He wants them to realize that we are taking pains to do what's right. You're giving a great gift here. And so we're taking great pains to make sure that it is administered in a godly way. And we're doing this not just for the eyes of man, although we understand that that's important. We need to have integrity in front of the church and in front of the world. But we understand there's something larger that's even beyond that. And that is the eyes of the Lord are on us. You know, that's much bigger than the eyes of man being on us. And so we want to do this to honor God. And we want to make sure that God is pleased in all of this. And so he talks about it a little bit about, again, it's housekeeping. It's how we're going to manage this. In addition, we are sending with them our brother, who has often proved to us in many ways that he is zealous. And now even more so because of his great confidence in you. As for Titus, he is my partner and co-worker among you. As for our brothers, they are representatives of the churches and an honor to Christ. Therefore, show these men the proof of your love and the reason for our pride in you, so that the churches can see it. So Paul here, in talking about generosity, is writing to say, what you give is going to be managed in a great way. And so he's talking about administration, and he's talking about managing this generous gift that they are going to give. It's going to be managed well because we know the eyes of man are on us, and that's true. People look at the church, and one of the failings that often happens of people blaming things on the church is they talk about money and how money is misappropriated at times. And so it's important to understand that the world is looking at us. People are looking at us. The eyes of men and women are on us. But Paul says, beyond that, even more important is the eyes of God are on us. Therefore, we're going to take great pains. He uses that word, great pains, to make sure that all of this is done in a right manner. And I really appreciate the church here in New York because they have the same attitude. Our administrative staff has an attitude, we're going to do what's right. And that's why we have an administrative staff to start with. It's because we want people with expertise, people who know the law, people who know the tax codes, that are administrating and looking over our contribution so that everything is managed well. We want to do that. I'm grateful for that. Definitely keeps me out of jail, and I'm grateful for that. But even more than that, hey, it's just the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do that when you're taking up a contribution, that it's administrated well, that it's managed well. And so I really appreciate our administrators. We've had Connie Bean right now is the main administrator, and she does an amazing job. But our whole office staff does an amazing job. And I'm really grateful for that. And I appreciate that Paul, even before the church in Corinth, but even more than that, for the church around the world, I mean, we're reading today what Paul thought about administrating and managing contribution. That's because it is important. It's important to Paul, it's important to God, it's important today that we need to do the right thing. And Paul is extremely practical here. He said, I'm sending Titus to you. But not only that, I'm sending another person to you. He doesn't even mention the name. And then he also says, and besides the two of them, I'm sending somebody else with them. So three people to manage and to administrate this contribution to the church in Jerusalem. But not only that, Paul himself made sure that the contribution made it to Jerusalem. And here's the thing, when you think about Paul taking the church, this contribution to Jerusalem, you might not realize this, but along the way back, there was a prophecy made to Paul that if you stay on this journey, you will end up in jail. You stay on this journey, when you get to Jerusalem, the Jews are after you. They're going to end up putting you in chains. And you know what Paul did? I know what I would have done. I would have said, fine, Titus, go for it, man. Titus, you are my man. You know, keep going. But Paul went on with the journey. Paul went on knowing that this was going to put him in jail. But this gift and the administration of the gift and the management of the gift was so important. And also the reason that he was doing it, for the Jews in Jerusalem, the Jewish Christians there, to realize how much their Gentile brothers and sisters cared for them. It was really about unity. It was larger than just the gift being given. And so Paul says, okay, if I'm going to end up in prison, fine. but he helped administrate this gift in the right way. And so he's teaching us here about how important this concept is. Now, I'm really thankful that we have brothers and sisters here that count the money. They always do it as a team. They never do it alone. I'm thankful that Phil Zayas, one brother that I think has more integrity than anybody I know, he's the one that we count on to manage all of that. And a special contribution next week, that'll be Phil back there with his team of people counting the money. So we have, he's our Titus. And I really look at Phil in that way. For me, in the ministry, he's a Titus to me. I count on him in so many ways because he's a man of deep and great integrity. But he doesn't do it alone, because that would be a way for the world to say, aha, look, you know, Phil's counting alone. He doesn't do it alone. He does it with a team of other people. And there are checks and balances. They have to write down what's being collected. They have to put that in an envelope. They have to get somebody else to take the envelope. And there's so many checks and balances that our administration is set up to make sure that we're administrating and managing this in the right way. I appreciate it that there is a basic policy in the church that no one on the ministry staff ever handles the money of the church. If somebody tries to give me their contribution late on a Sunday, they come in a little late, they try to, here, Steve, here's my contribution. I'm like, no, no, no. No, I can't handle that. That's like hot lava to me, you know? You seen that new game, Hot Lava? Somebody yells out hot lava, and you have to, you know, like the floor becomes lava. You guys are safe. All you got to do is lift your feet. You're safe. I'd have to find a place to jump, okay? But that's how I look at the contribution. Somebody tries to give me something. No, I can't. I can't do that. And then I say, either turn it in next week or give it to Phil, you know? And that way I know that it's managed in the right way. That way people know that I don't deal with our contribution. As one of the things that you won't see me doing, you won't see Irby doing it, anyone on our ministry staff. That's just a policy that we have. We don't handle contribution. Even when we're selling books and things like that, you know, you might notice that I don't, like we sold the Elizabeth Lang's book, you know, I don't take the money for that. We get somebody else. If it's a women's day, you know, Iris does a great job getting the tickets and selling the tickets for women's day. Because if you don't approach her, she's going to approach you. Yeah, she's going to come after you to buy that ticket for Women's Day. But Lee doesn't take up the money for that. You know, that's because that's just us wanting to do what's right in the eyes of the Lord and in the eyes of man. And so Paul here is talking about something that is extremely important. You know, it's interesting when you look at what I just read. There's probably very little in that that you would put down as a memory verse. It's not like the Sermon on the Mount, where almost everything in the Sermon on the Mount you want to memorize. You want to memorize all the Beatitudes. And there's really none of this is something that we would assign as a memory verse. But it's super important, because he's talking about the generosity of the church and how that generosity should be administered in a correct way. So another point that goes along with this is it shows the importance of generosity, Paul does here. If he's willing to get Titus to leave where he is and come all the way there, and notice Titus volunteered for this. He wanted to help out. And then bring in another person, and then bring in a third person, and then Paul also then get on a boat with this money. It shows the importance of our generosity and the importance of our gift. And giving is really important. Generosity is important because it not only helps other people, but it helps us. And Paul knows that. He knows that a generous church is a healthy church. Generous disciples are healthy disciples. Not just in, you know, giving money, but giving time, giving their talent, giving their lives to the lost and to people that want to know about Jesus. That's all a part of generosity. And Paul knows that generosity is not just good for the people that receive the gift, but it's just as good for the giver. And so he really emphasizes this, not for one chapter, but two whole chapters. He talks about this topic because it's important for all of us. One writer said this, "Finally, one of the reasons Paul was able to be so enthusiastic and so convincing about the offering was that he was convinced of its importance. But he was also convinced that their giving was essential to spiritual growth." I want you to see that. Paul knew that generosity is essential to spiritual growth. That's why he's so enthusiastic and has such conviction about this. It says he made no apologies for asking them to help. And I think that's a great attitude that Paul has there. I'll be honest with you, sometimes it is difficult for me to ask. But when I feel that, I have to think about, but that's the wrong attitude, Steve, because it's good for people to give. It's good for people to be generous. I mean, you probably noticed, I don't talk about giving very often. And that's really, it's a fault of mine. I've learned in this study of these chapters, I need to talk about it more, and I don't need to apologize. Because it's good for people to be generous. Good for people to give. You know, and that's what Paul is talking about here, and it's really, really true. Those who help and give are usually the people that have their hearts softened and do the best spiritually. It's good for our spiritual growth. You know, it's good to be able to go down to the Hope School and volunteer and put some hours in there helping out the kids. And when you give and give and give, yes, you leave tired, but it's a good tired. It's a good tired because you know that you've helped someone that day. It's good to stay up late at night and study the Bible with someone and just pour through the scriptures with them. And you watch them and you see them and the light comes on. You see that they're getting it. And you leave tired because it's late at night. And you leave tired because you poured yourself out into that study. But that's a good tired. And it's a great feeling. Now, I was just up in New England. I was in Hartford. And we took all of our ministry staff up there. We met with all the ministry staff of all the New England churches. Boston, Hartford, Springfield, New Groton. They all came together. And we came together, and for 2 days, we talked as leaders and as a ministry staff about the future of our church. And we brought in the older people, and we brought in the younger people. And it was great. We had some people that had been on staff for 35 years. And then we had some other people that had been on staff for a week and a half. They had no clue what was going on, but it was awesome to have them there. Now, we had people that from all kinds of different backgrounds, people with all kinds of racial backgrounds, people from big ministries, people from small ministries. And we got together, and for a couple of days, we talked about the future of our church. And I was selected as one of the group leaders. We had these small groups, so they would have these questions, and you actually had homework. You had to come in having watched videos and arrive ready to talk, and then we broke off into groups, and we had like 10 questions to discuss, and another time 10 questions to discuss, and another time 5 questions to discuss, and then after all the groups met, everyone did a presentation on what their group had discussed, and so you're there for an hour and 10 minutes watching these PowerPoints and these presentations, you know, and I had a group. It was a group of 9 people, and it was a great group. It was an elder couple. This man serves as a shepherd in Springfield. It was the evangelist and the women's ministry leader from New Groton. It was another elder and his wife from the Boston church, been disciples for 23 years in Boston, serving and helping lead a region. Both retired, living on their retirement, serving full-time in the ministry. Couple with great hearts. And then our youngest couple is actually 42 years old, but they lead a region in the Boston church. And so I was leading this group, and I got to tell you, I am definitely an introvert. I am a guy who doesn't like to talk much. And to be honest, I don't like to hear much talking. I'm just being honest. I'm keeping it real, okay? Yeah. So... I remember one day Phil Garrison was just talking. You know Phil. He was just talking and talking and talking and talking and talking. I said, "Phil, do you ever run out of words?" And so that's just how I am. That's how God made me, okay? I try not to be selfish, but that's how God made me. And so I was sitting here, and I was the group leader, you know. And so we were talking, and the first 2 hours, it was great, you know, and I was engaged, okay? The second two-hour conversation, it went okay. It was okay. But then the third conversation, I was spent, basically. I'd heard enough words, you know? And so I really had to, put myself into the conversation. Especially there was one man who, when he talked, he talked quite a bit. I'm trying to be gracious here. Some might describe it as long-winded. I wouldn't do that, okay? But I knew every time he opened his voice, I knew we got 10 minutes. This is going to take at least 10 minutes. And plus, you know, God bless him, he grew up in Texas. And so every word came out like this. And he was slow and deliberate. And there are times I wanted so badly to finish the sentence for him, because I was three words ahead. You know New Yorkers, you know, and I've been in New York long enough to be a New Yorker. And like, if it's taking that long, you're like, let me just finish this for you, okay? And so I was so tempted to do that, but I held back. But I have to say, during that last 2 hours, it really, I had to be determined to be giving. I had to set my mind, because what I wanted to do was just wrap it up in a nice, neat package and let's go. Let's go do something else, you know. But I had to sit there as the facilitator and leader. I had to sit there till everyone had talked about everything they wanted to talk about. And I not only had to do that, I had to be an active listener. You know what that is, right? You know, every now and then I had to say yes and I understand and get where you're coming from, and those kind of things, even though behind my mind, I was basically just checked out. But I, in front of my mind, it was like, yes, okay, I get you, I hear you. You know, that was a real challenge for me. And I have to, because I was focused on being giving and focused on trying to listen actively, I came out of those conversations, I was worn out. I'm talking about only 6 hours of work over 2 days, really, in those conversations, but it wore me out, because that's what giving does. When you really try to actively give, whether it's in a conversation, or it's in a Bible study, or it's at the Hope School, or it's with your family, it tires you out. And so I was driving home, and I found myself just nodding off. You know, I was by myself. I found my, yeah, and it was the middle of the day. And like for 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was like, whoa, am I going to get home, you know? And I got home, and I took a nap. I took a three-hour nap, okay, when I got home, because I was just so worn out. But it was a good worn out. That's my point. If you don't know where I'm going with all this, that's my point, all right? It was a good tired, okay? It was good to be worn out in that way. And I think for all of us, we need those moments of having a good tired, a good feeling that I have given here, I've been generous here, I've tried hard, I've been engaged. And I just want to encourage all of us, as disciples, that's how we're to be. That's what Paul is saying here. It's good to give. It's good to be generous. Because whenever you're generous, you're not just helping somebody else out, you're actually helping yourself out. It's good for your own heart to be generous. And it was good for my heart to be generous in that way. I appreciate people that are generous by nature. I appreciate so much the Ponsadas and all they do for our church here. They're just generous by nature. They are servants by nature. And I'm really grateful for them. You know, we're going to have a meeting after church here, and we're going to be talking about our service teams. And we have four service teams in the church, and they rotate responsibilities about every 4 months. And we have four leadership couples over these service teams. And I'm so grateful for the service team, because what the service teams do is the service teams allow us, you know, most corporations and most groups, it's 20% of the people that do 80% of the work. Well, in the church, we don't want to be like that. In the church, we want everybody to get involved. We want everyone to use their gifts for God. And so in the church, we have these service teams where we just try to ask everyone, please serve, please help, because it's good for you. It's good for your heart. helps you to feel connected with the church when you're giving in that way. And so I'm really thankful for Rick and Daria, who lead one of the service teams. I'm thankful for Marty and Denise, who lead another service team. Angel and Roz are service team leaders as well. And Nelson and Yvette are service team leaders. So, yes, grateful for all of them. But, you know, also, we really have a fifth service team, and that's our worship team. Because our worship team, they get here early on Sundays. We run through the songs. We get the songs through the week. And if we don't know the songs, then we try to work on the songs through the week. And it's a really encouraging time. It's encouraging to be together. But they get here early. They pour out their hearts in the worship. They're working on the craft of being able to even be better singers or a better bass player or whatever. I appreciate our worship team so much. I appreciate them getting here early and really setting the tone for our worship together. And we have a great time together. And so I want us to recognize that, yeah, we have a fifth service team. These brothers and sisters that really help us out with the music ministry and with the worship team. And so, first, let me have, I think there's only three of the couples that are here. I think one's in the teaching ministry. But the service team leaders. So, I don't know, Daria, I see you here. I thought I saw, there's Nelson and Yvette back there. I think they're back there. Okay. And I think I saw Denise earlier, but she might be back there with the kids also. And Efren and Cindy, there's Cindy. Why don't you guys stand up? And we want to just say thank you so much for the work that you do. Thank you so much. We're going to have a meeting after this. It's going to be a great meeting. I'm looking forward to it. And I also want to ask anyone who participates in our worship team to stand up right now. And just so that we can recognize you. And we are grateful to you. So thank you. Thank all of you. And really, there's so many others I could thank. There are people that come every Sunday to help with ushering. There are people that come in early, not even on a service team, to help set up the chairs. There are people that help clean up things at the end of the service. And I think one of the ones I want to recognize there is Quentin. You might see Quentin. You know, he's there helping out to break down all the equipment. Every Sunday, he's up here breaking down the equipment. That's awesome. You know, and it just shows us, hey, if he can do it, all of us can do it. Come on. Come on. But it's great. And just getting, you know, all of us involved in different ways. I'm so thankful for Fayol and all she does with our hope work. That is a great day. Is she in here right now, or is she back with the kids? Probably back with the kids. See, these people that serve, they just serve. They have other jobs. They keep serving in other ways. So I will mention this and close out with this point, is we have a VBS coming up this summer. And our VBS, Vacation Bible School, if you don't know the initials, it's really great for our children. It really helps our children to understand more about God. And I can remember going to Vacation Bible School when I was a kid. I can remember learning the songs, the church songs, through Vacation Bible School. I can remember scriptures that we learned and memorized in Vacation Bible School. Back then, we gave away gifts. The person with the most visitors that week got a Bible. And I have a Vacation Bible School Bible that I won from getting the most visitors out to church when I was a kid. And so Vacation Bible School really, I looked forward to it. It really helped me. And so we're doing that again this summer. It's going to be great, great for our kids, but also great for all of us because, again, generosity, when you give to someone, you're giving to yourself. And during Vacation Bible School, it's going to be all hands on deck. And so we need everybody to help out in some way. And so I know Lauren, she's going to be probably tapping some shoulders. And when she does, please be ready to say, okay, I'll help. Also, the service team leaders, they're going to be tapping some shoulders because our service teams, we need just every now and then to make sure that people are serving on them. And so they come up and they basically, they select the team. If they come up and they've selected you on their team, then please feel honored about that. And also be willing to serve and willing to help when you're called upon to help. So that is really important because Paul shows us here in 2 Corinthians 8 that generosity is not just about giving to someone and them benefiting, but when you give, you benefit yourself. And so that's an important part of service. Let's look in chapter 9, verses 1 through 5. And very quickly, I want to go through these verses right here. And it's about preparation, being prepared. So Paul has talked about administrating the gift, managing the gift, the people that are going to be involved in that, how it's important to do it before the Lord and before humanity. And now he says, there is no need for me to write to you about this service to the Lord's people, for I know that your eagerness to help, and I have been boasting about it to the Macedonians, telling them that since last year, you and Achaia were ready to give, and your enthusiasm has stirred most of them to action. But I'm sending the brothers in order that our boasting about you in this matter should not prove hollow, but that you may be ready, as I said you would be. For if any Macedonians come with me and find you unprepared, we, not to say anything about you, would be ashamed of having been so confident. So I thought it necessary to urge the brothers to visit you in advance and finish the arrangements of the generous gift you had promised. Then it will be ready as a generous gift, not as one grudgingly given. Okay, when you look through these five verses, there's probably none of them that you would underline and say, oh, I'm going to memorize this verse this week. But it's an important concept that Paul is talking about here. And the concept is be prepared. Be ready to give. Don't let it sneak up on you. Why? He says specifically here, because the disciples in Jerusalem need this gift. They're counting on this gift. I've let them know that it's coming, and they are waiting in anticipation for relief, for famine relief. They know it's coming, so please don't embarrass me by not giving. I mean, that's basically what he's saying here. Please, I've promised it's coming. Don't embarrass me. Be ready. Be ready to give. And so he wants to make sure that the gift is ready because he knows that people are counting on the gift being given. And that's true. Churches do count on our generosity. I shared last week about French West Africa, and I talked about the young man Michael, the administrator in the church in Abidjan, and how he stayed in that office for 5 days without any food in order to be able to protect the office, protect the funds that were there so that no looters would come through and take everything. And then when he saw a break in the action, he actually put money all in his clothes and went out at threat of his own life to deliver the contribution to the disciples. Well, the fact that there was money waiting in the office is because they were prepared. And that preparation actually was part of the gift that we gave to the church in Abidjan. This has happened in other parts of the world. There's a brother named Edmund Jolly. Edmund Jolly leads the church in Monrovia, Liberia. Edmund is a brother who's been in the ministry a number of years. For a while, he was outside of Monrovia, but that's where he's from. He's from Liberia. And so when the war broke out in Liberia, Edmund was one of the ones selected to actually go into Liberia and try to help relieve the pain of the disciples there, to deliver food, to deliver funds for the disciples there. Fortunately, they didn't have to make a request back to the States. Why? Because we had already given our gift. Our generosity had been prepared, and it had been given, and it was there. And so Edmund, again, at risk of his own life, sneaks into the country and starts buying up whatever he can buy to deliver food to the disciples. The condition is so unsafe that at night he chooses to sleep on top of a bus so that people won't attack him, so that he'll be hidden from the soldiers that are roaming the streets. And that's how Edmund spent his night. The safest place he could think to sleep was the top of a bus. Imagine that. And yet, he did that because of his heart for the disciples. And he was prepared to do it because of our generosity. So I just want you to know, disciples are counting on our generosity. You know, Leslie Cadet and his wife, the ministers in Haiti, they're counting on our generosity. Edmund Jolly is counting on our generosity. And Mike, the administrator in French West Africa, is counting on our generosity. Moses Kagala, some of us have heard Moses speak. You might not remember him, but he's from Kinshasa. The video showed part of the church in Kinshasa. Moses is an amazing brother. He's a great brother. But again, he has to go sometimes days without there being any electricity. I was supposed to go over there last fall, but they said, wait, we're probably going to have an election this fall. And so you don't want to be around during election season. You just don't want to be here. And I said, but you'll be with me. I mean, you're there. And he said, no, Steve, you can't come. It's just not safe for you to be here. But they don't leave. They stay. And the fact is that election was postponed. And the fact is, they don't know when the election might be. You know, we think we have problems in our country. Well, they can't even have an election on time in their country. They don't even know when the election might happen in their country. And so that's what Moses puts up with all the time. But I love that story about Moses going into a hotel. He was there for a different reason. And he'd been praying for a worship team, praying for his music ministry. And he heard music coming out of this room. And he was so thrilled by the musicians in that room, he just made his way into the party, made his way up to the front of the room, and he invited that lead singer that you saw the picture of, invited him out to church. And that lead singer, as he mentioned, had been praying for a way to get out of the worldly secular scene that he was in. And Moses had been praying for a worship leader. This guy had been praying to get out of the world, and then they connect. Just by Moses being audacious, having audacious faith, praying bold prayers, and then following up with those prayers by going in and just saying, hey, come on out to church. And then the keyboard player was baptized, and the backup singer was baptized, and the drummer was baptized. And their worship team basically came from Moses praying that prayer and being bold that day and approaching the band. And I appreciate that we have a brother like that in Kinshasa, in the Democratic Republic of Congo. You might not even know where that is. It's right in the middle of Africa, right in the heart of Africa. But that's what Moses Kagala does. He just is a man of great faith. And because of our contribution, he gets to do what he does, be full-time in the ministry. So the point is that there are brothers and sisters that are counting on us. How unfortunate it would be if we needed to call up the cadets and say, that's the leaders in Haiti, in Port-au-Prince, and say, sorry, the support's just not there right now. Or to phone up Mike in Abidjan and say, sorry, the support's just not there right now. These are brothers and sisters that are already going through so much more than in a day than we face in a week. And we need to be ready to give to them. So be prepared. One writer says this, Paul was a thoughtful master at organization. He knew that the affairs of the church, including the taking of a missionary offering for Jerusalem's needy Christians, needed to be done decently and in order. And he also wanted those young Christians to know that there wasn't anything unspiritual about raising money for the cause. In fact, being generous is all about spirituality. It's all about being a spiritual person. And so just to close out, let me just say that I really appreciate all of the gifts that you have given the church over the years. I appreciate all of us who have participated in special contributions. You know, some of us for 10 years, some of us for 20 years, some of us for 30 years that we've been participating in special contributions. But more than that, the churches in Africa and the churches in Haiti, they appreciate your gift. Anytime I travel to Africa, and this is without fail, anytime I'm in Nigeria, or I'm in Abidjan, or I'm in Kenya, East Africa, or anytime I've traveled to Haiti, there's never been a single time where the leaders of the church tell me, Steve, I want you to go back. I want you to say thank you to the church in New York. I want you to say thank you to the disciples there, because we appreciate their generosity. And they really, really do. They sincerely mean that. They are grateful for the gift. But I want you to understand that we give not because they say thank you, but we give because God commands it. And we give because we're giving to the Lord. And Paul has already talked about that. Give yourself first to the Lord, and then give your gift. And so we have an opportunity next Sunday to be generous. We have an opportunity to give to the Lord and to do good around the world. So I want to encourage you as you leave today to make sure that you're ready. Be prepared, because it's an opportunity for us as we give to others to really grow in our own spirituality. And it helps our hearts to be more like the heart of Jesus. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Hudson Valley Region Podcast. For more information about our ministry or to attend a church service, please visit our website at hvregion.com.